Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is titled Real Education and Education Myths, recorded in 2008. Dennis McQuistion, former clinical professor of corporate governance and executive director of the Institute for Excellence in Corporate Governance at the University of Texas at Dallas, and Charles Murray, the W.H. Brady Scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, discuss Mr. Murray's book, Real Education, and his critiques of the American educational system. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
5 years ago, I had the opportunity to interview Charles Murray about, at that time, his most recent book called Human Accomplishment. Now, many of you may know Charles Murray as the author of Losing Ground, The Bell Curve, and In Our Hands, but he's here with me today in Las Vegas. We're both here attending Freedom Fest, and we're going to talk about his latest book out, which is called Real Education. Now, Charles, you have done it once again. You've written another controversial book. Tell that viewer what Real Education is all about.
Dennis, I don't set out to write controversial books. I just kind of end up that way.
I see.
This has as its theme four simple truths, what I call simple truths. And the reason I call them simple is they really are. Here they are. The first simple truth is ability varies. Real simple.
Well, it sounds simple, but as you're going to tell us, it's not that simple.
But it's basically people understand that.
Okay, I got it.
The second one is half of the children are below average.
Now, I thought we were in Lake Wobegon.
Huh? Yes. And I have to say, that one I have gotten into trouble by saying on college campuses. I say, half of the children are below average in IQ. And people will hiss me until they stop and think that, yeah, they have to be. The third one is too many people are going to college. We can talk about that. That's getting a little less simple, but I think it's just as obvious once you think about it. The fourth one, I have to do a little explaining about right away, because the fourth one is the future of America depends on how we educate the academically gifted. And the reason I have to hurry to explain that is I am not saying we must take the little darlings and provide them more and more care and nurturing. I want to hold their feet to the fire. Mm-hmm. But those are the four simple truths. I got a chapter on each, and we can talk about them in any order you want.
All right, let's talk about them one through four. Let's talk about this idea of ability varies. And you use some great examples in the book. Give that viewer some of them.
Well, the first one, think back to first grade. You're playing tag or you're playing kickball on the school ground, and suddenly you realize some kids were better at this than others. It was also true that some kids were better at reading Dick and Jane than others. Mm-hmm. Kids know that right away. They know the pecking order right away. And the pecking order is not just academics. It's sports. It's how you look. It's how popular you are. It's the kind of thing which everybody knows is true, and we have tried to pretend it's not true.
Why have we tried to pretend that it's not true?
Oh, Dennis, the answer to that question is so complicated. But let me give you an illustration of why we really do deny it, or how we really deny it. Think about the No Child Left Behind Act. You have read 100 stories about how we aren't meeting our targets, and kids aren't passing. Try to think of the last one you read where it said, well, of course, one of the reasons that kids aren't passing the exams is that a lot of kids just aren't smart enough to do it. Nobody ever says it.
That doesn't seem politically correct, does it?
It's not that people don't realize that that's the reason. It's just like the emperor's new clothes. Nobody wants to say it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a fake controversy. Because if you get people in a corner and say, are you really trying to tell me that any child can learn anything if we only try hard enough? Nobody's going to agree with that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you use some of the materials that you gained from all the research that you and your late co-author had with the bell curve, and you talk about IQ, which itself has gotten you in
big trouble.
Big trouble. So yeah. Tell us about that, and tell us about a guy named Howard Gardner and what those things mean in terms of characteristics.
Well, Dennis, I'm trying to be a peacemaker, because everybody tries to put Howard Gardner and Dick Hernstein and me at two different poles. Howard Gardner says there are multiple intelligences, people are smart in many different ways. Hernstein and Murray say, their IQ is the be-all and end-all. That was never true on either side. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, look, there are lots of different abilities. That's really true. Mm-hmm. And even among intellectual abilities, visual spatial skills are real different from verbal skills in many cases. All of that is true. But the things that schools teach in the form of college education and academic education, they draw on what Howard Gardner calls verbal skills, linguistic skills, and visual spatial skills. and logical mathematical skills.
So even though you agree with him that there are lots of different skills, when you're talking about education, instead of having seven or perhaps eight things to worry about, you're worrying about two or three of them.
Well, yeah, two and a half in terms of academic abilities. Mm-hmm. It's also true that interpersonal ability is real important, charm and so forth. Intrapersonal ability, which Howard Gardner talks about, that's diligence and self-discipline. Of course that's important. The problem, Dennis, is that people have a kind of flabby way of saying, oh, because kids are smart in different ways, then everybody can sort of learn anything if we just give them the right way to learn it. That's not true. Uh-huh. If you want to learn calculus, you gotta have logical mathematical ability. If you don't have it, all the interpersonal ability in the world isn't gonna get you there.
Got it. Okay, let's move on to number two, this idea that half are below average.
Yeah. And here we got a real problem, because most people are segregated in schools. Well, I'll talk to your audience. I mean, I'm talking to your audience right now and asking them, did you go to a school in an affluent suburb? Or did you go to a school that was filled with parents who were engineers or college teachers? Or did you go to a private school? If you did any of those things, you probably didn't know anybody who was below average in intelligence.
I found that interesting in your book about that, because, again, this idea of half the people being below average kind of gets at people a little bit.
It grates on the nerves.
Yeah, but then when people who went to schools that produce better academics for reasons that are...
It's not a random selection.
That's right, it's not.
And even, now I went to a high school in a small town which had everybody. So in the high school we had the full range.
Yeah, and I did too.
But which courses did I take? Well, I was real active in debate. Not everybody goes into debate. I loved history, I loved literature. I was taking honors courses and those things. The segregation that goes on within the school means that my close friends were almost always way above average.
Well, you gave some examples in there of different questions, and I didn't read all. I was embarrassed to read all the questions, but I'm going to give you one of them and then let you tell that viewer what you said. There was a very simple mathematical question that had to do with $90 and then 10%. Do you remember what that was?
About employees. In a company. It said there were 90 employees last year and they increased their workforce by 10% this year. How many employees do they have this year?
I got that one right. I got that one right. 99, I got that one right.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, it asks you to take 10% of 90, which is really easy, and add 9 to 90, which is really easy. Of 8th graders, 62% did not get that answer correct.
See, that blew me away.
And a lot of the rest of them who got it correct just got it by guessing. So the best estimate is well over 70% couldn't answer that question. Now, everybody says, gee, that's a terrible commentary on the schools. Well, we've been teaching percentages since 4th grade, been teaching addition since 2nd and 3rd grade, and you go talk to any teacher. I'm not saying you couldn't raise that number at all who get it right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying you talk to any teacher and they will tell you, look, you can drill some kids again and again, and you could even get them to get that one right if you do it enough drill, but then if you shift the question a little bit and say, well, they fired 10% of the people, now figure that one out, they're a C again. And what I'm trying to say is not, gee, these kids are really dumb and shouldn't spend any time on them. I am saying that you've got to come to grips with the fact that kids have varying levels of ability to deal with this material, and quit blaming the teachers for everything that goes wrong, and quit asking these kids who do have limited abilities to do things that they can't do.
They can't do, right. Yeah. Because then it becomes, they internalize this thing and they become, quote, a loser, sometimes just in their own mind, and sometimes they are the children left behind, aren't
and,
they?
And the worst part is you will get a kid who is in eighth grade who has a real knack with engines. He can take an engine and sort of poke around and fix it when I couldn't have a clue. But he's no good in algebra. And everybody's saying to him, oh, you've got to stay on the academic track and go to college or else you'll be a second-rate citizen. That is a crime against that student's natural abilities and what we ought to be doing.
Does this, and I didn't remember seeing this in the book, you may not have addressed it, but does this have anything at all to do with the high dropout rate once kids get to the eighth or ninth grade? Do they start,
yeah,
does this
course.
Sort of
course it does. I mean, you're taking, believe me, high school counselors now get in trouble if they don't encourage every child to go to college. If a counselor is starting to say, you know, maybe shop is what you really love, then they'll get complaints from school administrators, they'll get complaints from parents and so forth, because my kid belongs in the academic track, which brings us to, of course, the question about too many kids going
to
college.
Of course, let's go to number three.
Which I feel very strongly about. First quick point is that if you're talking about a traditional college education with philosophy and history and math and sociology and all that stuff, about 10 to 15% of kids have the academic ability to do college level work.
Okay, let me stop you there, because when I read that in your book, I mean, I have to tell you, I was surprised at the low percentage. Should
well,
I have been? Or?
Particularly since we got 28% of the population has bachelor's degrees.
That's why I was surprised.
What's Murray talking about?
Right, exactly.
Well, the thing is that college, those traditional college courses I was just talking about are not how you get BAs anymore.
Right.
And what I do in the book, and I had a lot of fun doing this, was I take some textbooks for basic college courses in psychology and art history and economics and so forth. I went to page 400, I just chose that page arbitrarily, just picked out a paragraph of about 100 words and just put it in the book. And I said, look at the text that has to be understood and interpreted here. This stuff is not easy. It's also not necessary to learn this stuff to be a happy, well-educated, and fulfilled human being. But we've taken this thing called a college education, and we have given it an artificial importance, whereby if you are just a high school graduate these days, people want to think of you as a second-class citizen, which is really stupid.
Well, now I'm guilty. I have to admit, I'm guilty. I have, I mean, both of my kids, I tell people, Charles, you can appreciate this, that I am really the luckiest guy in the world. I have two kids, both of whom have never been in jail, graduated from college in the appointed number of years, and have never moved back home. I consider that the ultimate in luck. Okay, now, but I also have I have a nephew and a niece, and their father, my brother, was college educated, as all my siblings were, and they didn't go to college. And so I've encouraged, you know, and I've pushed, and I've been obnoxious about it, frankly, Charles, and trying to, why haven't you gone to college? And I have another brother of mine whose kids didn't go to college either. I mean, have I been doing the wrong thing here?
Well, in a part, you're responding to the fact that everybody thinks college is so important, and you're saying to them, if you don't have a BA, there are a lot of jobs you can't even apply for, because the people who hire do not even interview people without BAs. But the reason is not because they've learned something in getting the BA, which an employer wants. Employers use the BA. Now, this is not true for engineering or something where you really learn something.
Sure.
But if you have a sociology major, there are very few employers that care what you learn in your sociology courses. They say, well, the fact that they got the BA means that person has a certain degree of intelligence and a certain degree of perseverance.
Perseverance, sure, exactly.
Well, you shouldn't have to spend 4 years at a college paying an outrageous tuition.
It is outrageous.
In order to show that to an employer. Why don't you have certification tests? So let's say that I want to be a journalist. Okay, so somebody goes to Columbia Journalism School and pays $40,000 a year. That's fine. And somebody else takes online journalism courses, and there are a lot of that kind of thing, and does some entry-level jobs in a newspaper. But there's a certification test in journalism which tests how much you know about journalism. All at once, you got a level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that Columbia graduate gets a mediocre score, and the kid who took the online courses gets a great score, mm-hmm. and I'm said in a newspaper, I'm saying, I'm a lot more impressed.
Right.
But if you don't have that certification score, you say, well, Columbia's an Ivy League college, you know, big deal, and what's an online course?
Well, help me with this. How did we get to the point, as an example, where high school teachers feel that they have to push and try to prepare virtually all of their students, so we don't have any child left behind that doesn't get to college? How do we get to that, in your estimation?
I'm pausing because, you know, we could talk for 2 hours about this. The prestigious jobs, you know, law and medicine and being a corporate CEO and so forth, are all associated with higher education. White collar has always been seen as a step up from blue collar. And so the prestige has been there, and as college opened up to more and more people, I can understand that it's natural that parents would say, gee, I want my kids to go to college. That was natural. What was unnatural was for us to put it on a pedestal. It used to be that everybody understood that smart people were scattered all throughout society, and you could look at a plumber, and that plumber would go home and listen to Verdi operas on, you know, I'm telling a true example.
Sure.
And that happened all the time. Mm-hmm. One of the things we talked about in the bell curve is the way that as brains have become more important in the intellectual sense economically, a lot more prestige continues to go to that. And I want, and one of the things, Dennis, in this book, I'm trying to say, do you know what? It's real easy to hire a first-rate lawyer in this country or a first-rate physician. I can do that in a nanosecond. Mm-hmm. I would really like to find a first-rate carpenter, a really terrific
right.
carpenter.
Yeah.
And when I can't do find him, I pay him a whole lot of money. The same goes for good plumbers and good electricians and good glaziers, people who are good at what they do.
Exactly.
That we have devalued.
Well, I think you're right about that, because I've said this many times in front of many audiences that, and my wife would tell you that this is true. I have absolutely zero skills when it comes to anything mechanical, or a carpenter, or any of that stuff. I am embarrassed they're that bad, and I've been tested for this, so I know it's not just empirical evidence; it is testing. I have none of that, so I have great respect for what you're talking about, and yet. As you say, we don't give them that same amount of respect. The second thing, though, that I want to ask you about goes back to the bell curve. For those of us who actually did read the whole book.
Very few.
Well, it's a tough book.
It's a tough book.
One of the things that you mentioned, I think sort of at the end, was this concern that you had that not only were we developing a sort of educational elite in this country, but they would be in certain universities, Ivy League, Stanford, et cetera. Talk to us a little bit about that and how it folds into this issue here.
Well, now we're segueing to the fourth, which is the future of America depends on how we educate the academically gifted. I do not want us to take the bright young kids and train them to become an elite that runs the country. I have a much more tough point to make. The country is run by an elite. The people who are the senior executives in all of our businesses, the people who decide what goes in the evening news, the people who write the books, who decide what goes in the television shows, constitute an elite. We don't elect them. They run the country. And one of the common denominators for that group is they're all real bright. Okay? Because those kinds of things do call for the logical, mathematical, and visual spatial skills mm-hmm. and so forth. And they are being educated now in ways which are okay in terms of their professional skills. Maybe it could be better, but it's okay. They are not being trained in a couple of other really important things, such as rigor in verbal expression, because unless you can say precisely what you mean, you really don't know what you think precisely. Rigor in forming judgments, which calls for much tougher training than they get right now in everything from logic to statistics to the study of history. But you know what? Two things that are most important they aren't getting. They are not being taught rigor in thinking about virtue and the good. You know, these kids who are in Stanford and Yale and Duke are nice kids. I can say that. I've gone to these colleges. But they are utterly naive in how hard it is to be good as opposed to being nice. They have never thought about the nature of virtue. Instead, we have the non-judgmental ethos which says, oh, we can't make any value judgments about this way of behaving or that way of behaving because that's judgmental. Well, I got news for you. The essence of virtue is the ability to make proper distinctions and judgments. So that's one thing that we've got to do with the gifted that we don't do. And the final thing is I want to humiliate them.
Humiliate them?
You know, these kids may be nice, but a lot of them are just as smug and self-satisfied as they can be. They have gone, many of them, from kindergarten through graduate school, if they haven't gone into sciences. Sciences is a different story. If they've been in social sciences, like I am, or in the humanities, they have never taken a course, many of them, that was so hard, they had to say to themselves, I'm not smart enough to do this. Mm-hmm. And because they've never taken a course that hard, and because professors these days are not any longer the people who read something and say, this is rubbish, go back and write it again from scratch, I refuse to even grade it. Mm-hmm. Nobody says that kind of thing.
No.
Because of that, you get all of these kids who go out and run the world who have no sense of their own limits. George Christian was one of Lyndon Johnson's press secretaries, and he said something that has stuck with me. He said, no one should be allowed to work in the West Wing of the White House who has not suffered a major disappointment in life. Well, I don't think anybody should be CEO of a corporation or a production manager for CBS News or writing a sitcom who does not know what that's like.
Interesting. Well, one of the reasons, obviously, why people go to college is because, I mean, all the numbers are already there in USA Today is because you look at the average college graduate and you look at the person who didn't graduate from college, the income disparity is huge and getting bigger.
Yep.
So why shouldn't I want to go to college?
That's one of the things that I want to grab young people by the scruff of the neck and say, look, those are averages. If you have it in you to be in the top 10% of electricians, but you only have it in you to be in the 50th percentile of white-collar managers, you're going to make a lot more money as an electrician. You're going to make good money as an electrician. The idea that the averages are higher for people with college educations has no bearing on what individual kids should be doing to maximize their own
incomes. That's an interesting point, because you make that point, again, the folks who never read the bell curve but who always made bad statements about you, is that you talked a lot about averages and the bell curve and standard deviations, but you were very clear on many, many occasions that just because they were averages didn't mean that any particular individual couldn't be way off to the right-hand side of this thing.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems that people have. They look at these averages and they tend to lump people together, whether we're talking about electricians or whether we're talking about any other group.
Yeah, well, the other thing is that a lot of these folks who are electricians, plumbers, end up running their own company. They are very entrepreneurial. They might not have been good at math or reading something, but they end up making a whole lot more money than anybody who ever got a college degree in sociology or something.
Yeah, but because I don't want to leave this program without making what I consider the most important point.
Good, we have a couple of minutes left.
The money isn't it. For any of us who have had the good luck to love what we do, we know the money is not it. We don't envy people who make lots more money than we are. To make your living doing something you love to do is the key satisfaction in life. That's not idealism. That's the reality of my life, and I bet it's the reality of your life.
Without a doubt.
Well, if that's the important thing, then what should education be doing with every child? To do the best possible job of finding out what that child's abilities are, mm-hmm. of whatever kind they are, and then helping that child find something that they're good at. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you find something you're good at, you also tend to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And you bring those two things together, and if you have done that, education has done its job.
Well, you're right, because so many people find themselves the proverbial square peg trying to fit into a round hole that their parents or their teachers or their peer group have tried to put them in. They're miserable as hell over here, and they may be making some money, but they never get it, do they?
I talk to college seniors, and every time I hear one say that they want to go to law school because it's a general purpose degree, I launch into a tirade telling them, don't do that. You know, first place, don't go directly to graduate school of any kind. Get the hell out of Dodge.
Find reality
and spend a few years in the real world, and maybe then you could you decide what you want to do. Because we have too many lawyers who are turning 40 and retiring to become carpenters, because that's really what
they
love doing.
That's what they wanted to do, right. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, you have obviously spent your life doing exactly what you want to do, and we have about a minute left, so tell that viewer what he or she can do to help make some of your reality real education.
Well, first place, don't ask the government to do it or the educational establishment, because they won't. a great deal of what needs to be done at education at both the undergraduate and the graduate level is simply, I mean, the elementary and secondary and college level, is to be sensible. Let kids do the things that they're good at doing. Teach them how to do that. Parents, stop telling your kids they have to go to college to be first-class citizen. And parents, stop forking over these huge tuition payments to colleges that are living off their reputation and not giving your kids an education worth having.
Well, it's always an education when I visit with you, Charles. Thank you so much for being here, and thank
pleasure.
You for joining us as well, because as you know, when you watch this program, we're always talking about things that matter with people who care.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.